Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mate, yeah.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by our tactics guy, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Hello.
How was your Christmas, mate?
Yeah, not bad, although I'm a little ill now, so I don't know if that's coming through.
Oh, right. I had it just before. So on the 23rd, I was literally like on the sofa, taking every possible remedy I could, thinking I might not make it down to my parents in Somerset for Christmas. Miraculous recovery on the 24th. Felt great. Or felt good enough to travel, and then drank through it over Christmas. And, you know, alcohol really does help these things. So I'm sure your New Year's Eve drinking will help your illness as well.
It better do.
And how are you feeling about Spurs? It's been a bit of a funny Christmas period. Started on such a high, and then obviously we've had the Wolves game.
Yeah, the recording's sort of come at a difficult time, but I think looking at it as a whole, it's not been too bad at all, is it?
I'm pretty much in agreement with that. I think you've got to take the Christmas period as a whole rather than on a game by game, because it's a case of managing this run of games rather than individual matches. I just want to start off with a quick thank you to listeners for their comments, for their iTunes reviews, for following us on Twitter, and for supporting the podcast in general throughout 2018. It's been a good year for The Extra Inch. We've really kicked on this year, and we've tried to become more regular. And obviously we've started recording via Skype rather than in person, which helps a lot because we're scattered all over the place. So makes it a lot easier to get them out. But obviously that then puts a huge burden on Nathan because he's producing these. We all record our audio individually, and then Nathan mixes it together and makes it sound good. And although we love doing this podcast, we can't keep asking Nathan to produce it for free. So we're going to be looking for a sponsor in the new year. If anyone has any links to potential sponsors or wants to sponsor the podcast, please do get in touch with us at theextrainch@thefightingcock.co.uk. That would be awesome. But otherwise, you know, we'll keep going until Nathan says no more. Let's speak about the Christmas period, Nath. Let's get your general thoughts on... So we've had the three matches so far, Everton 6-2, Bournemouth 5-1 and Wolves 3-1 defeat. And, okay, there's a bit of doom and gloom after the Wolves game, but on the whole, Spurs are, you know, looking pretty good. We're second in the form table behind Liverpool, and we're now third in the actual table, aren't we?
I think so, yeah.
So what have you made of the way Poch has handled this Christmas period?
I was definitely frustrated after the Wolves game. I felt that was there was some obvious issues going on in the second half, and I tweeted so much at the time saying, you know, come on, changes need to happen. And I think Trippier was probably concussed. And I think that we don't deal with concussions even slightly well at all in football. But, you know, specifically from a team perspective and a tactical perspective, what was he doing on the pitch? But again, as I said earlier, sort of looking at it as a whole, you know, we've had two really good score lines, at least against Everton and Bournemouth. But I do feel that this Wolves performance was coming, a large part because of the fatigue, and that's beyond Pochettino's control. I've said before on this podcast, I think that there's too much football, you know, from a club perspective, and from a player perspective, there's too much being asked of them. So these kind of things are going to happen, and it's not Pochettino's decision to play, you know, once every couple of days. We've got another game coming up tomorrow. So yeah, there's some frustration, but I also sort of think that it was going to be hard to avoid. And also from sort of a style of play perspective, I think that this performance was coming because we've been playing this football, which is very un-Pochettino, in that we just sort of send the ball forward, we force the ball forward, and we just say, okay, Eriksen, Dele, Son, Kane make it happen. And you know, they've scored 12 goals in the last three games. So it's, you know, the goals have come, but without that element of control, it's not our game. And yeah, there are holes in it. And Wolves, they sat deep, which is a bit unlike them. But, you know, Pochettino pointed out himself how sort of they were deeper than we thought they were going to be, because they knew that if our game plan is just to go direct, you know, not like properly lumping it up, but to go early and to go a bit long and to go wide, that we can be suffocated with that. And I think other teams will see that now and will have more problem, and then our midfield will give us more issues.
I think that's a really good point that you've ended on there about Wolves playing deep to counteract the fact that we've been playing lots of long balls. And it's those clever passes over the top rather than, like you say, a traditional long ball up to a target man, hold it up and then play off the seconds. These are targeted balls over the top of the defence for the likes of Son and Dele to run onto, and it's been working tremendously well, and it just came unstuck. And you sort of have to take your hat off to Nuno in that respect, for sort of reading the way the game might pan out. And actually, Spurs have had to adapt because of the situation with our squad and the injuries we've got at the moment. And I wanted to get your thoughts on how we've rotated the team over these past 3-4 matches, because Poch is famed for rotating fullbacks, and we've sort of carried on doing that, although, you know, Walker Peters arguably hasn't played quite as much as certain people like me would have liked him to. But the central midfield has been the same. It's been Sissoko and Winks, and then Eriksen as a kind of auxiliary third midfielder. I guess that's due to circumstance broadly, because we have no Dembele, no Wanyama, no Eric Dier. But could he have played Skip? Could some of those minutes have gone to someone like Skip? And how would you have handled that differently, Nathan?
Yeah, again, I'd like to see more rotation, and there have been options, but it is a difficult situation. I don't think Pochettino wants, you know, Winks and Sissoko to play hundreds and hundreds of minutes in a single month. For 2 years, I'd been saying Winks should play more, Winks should play more, Winks should play more, and now he's a regular. I'm saying, oh, I'm not sure about Harry Winks, so I'm reluctant to say, well, Skip needs to play, because it's sort of a repeat of the same thing. I do still have, you know, plenty of optimism about Skip. I do have plenty of optimism about Winks. But I'm because of the sort of... I don't want to just say, okay, well, that academy product doesn't work, throw that one out and get the next one in, sort of thing, because I think that's a really awful way of looking at things. Yes, I'd like to have seen Skip play more, but I understand why he hasn't.
Yeah, and I think the issue with Winks is that no central midfield player is going to be perfect, or if they are perfect, they're going to cost you, well, like you've seen, you've been doing the research in terms of the transfer market, they cost upwards of 50 million to get hold of a central midfielder that can do everything. So naturally, Winks can't do everything. What he's very good at is getting the ball down quickly and passing it quickly and getting those triangles working, and occasionally playing a more expansive pass like we saw to Kyle Walker-Peters for one of his assists. And, you know, that works really well when you've got an adequate screening midfielder next to you, like Eric Dier. It doesn't work quite so well when you've got Moussa Sissoko next to you. And although we've all been very up on Sissoko over the past 6 weeks, we have to remember that Sissoko is still Sissoko. He's not become Moussa Dembele. He can't do everything. That's just not his game. He hasn't got the capability. And the things that Winks and Sissoko have been really good at have been the transition play, quickly getting the second balls and turning them into attacking opportunities with either a run through the middle or a quick pass. And that has blown Everton and Bournemouth away. And we just came unstuck with their frailties against Wolves, where, like you mentioned earlier, we didn't have the control of the midfield, because that's not their game to do that. They don't screen. They don't lock off the passing lanes. They don't track runners so well. These are things where those players have weaknesses, like any player has a whole set of weaknesses. And I do feel for Poch, but at the same time, he took a calculated gamble playing those two game in, game out for four games, and ultimately came unstuck at the last hurdle. I think we have to look at it as a block of games and say that it's broadly speaking, it's a success this Christmas period. Again, Spurs have done really well over Christmas again, and that's, you know, fantastic work from Poch. It's just the Wolves game was a frustrating one, and perhaps he could have changed it sooner. But maybe we should talk about the positives. What did you make of the Everton and Bournemouth games?
They were certainly fun, and, you know, it's nice to see that, because it's been not the most exhilarating season, or maybe not even the most exhilarating sort of year for Tottenham, you know, especially as the time under Pochettino has gone. So yeah, it's nice to see those scorelines crop up, and that direct football, it does have sort of a flavour that's maybe been missing. So it's sort of a bit of a relief to see us play a bit more direct occasionally, just because it's a bit different. But yeah, it's not when we've had those scorelines in the past. It's come from the sort of success of Pochettino's plan A, and I think that is truly beautiful to watch. But that's not quite what we've seen.
I wanted to get your thoughts on Walker Peters, because obviously I'm a fanboy, and you know, everyone knows that I'm a big fan of his, and so I have got a bit of an agenda towards him. But you haven't ties to Walker Peters, because you didn't watch him as a 16-year-old in the academy. He's a fresh player to you. We had a question about him from Kenneth, who is Raoul Newt on Twitter. He said, do a bit on Kyle Walker-Peters' Premier League starts and Man of the Match ratio, which I enjoyed. Well, tell us, Nathan, what do you think of Walker-Peters' performance against Bournemouth, where he got 3 assists?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the 3 assists is sort of, you know, not something that we can expect him to repeat. But, I love the way he carries the ball. I like that he's got a bit of pace about him. I think he makes better decisions than Aurier does. Again, as with Skip, I'm reluctant to say, you know, although I have done, I'm reluctant to say this player needs to be starting, sort of thing. And I understand why he wants to take his time with him. But all I can really say is I've been happy with what he has done, and that only makes me want to see more. I do think that there are defensive frailties within his game. I do understand why, you know, he maybe hasn't displaced Trippier, who, you know, we're very harsh on in this podcast, probably too harsh. But I'm happy with what I've seen. I hope I get to see more, but I'm not throwing my toys out the pram.
Sure, and I think that's a perfectly reasonable position to take. He's, like you say, not perfect defensively, and I'm not going to claim he is. But what he has got is that bit of recovery pace that Trippier and arguably Aurier actually both don't quite have off a starting. You know, he's got acceleration. He can get back quickly if needs be, and that's really helpful. And that will cover some of those defensive frailties that he has to his game. But like you say, fantastic moving with the ball and moving off the ball. Some of those assists came from making really well-timed runs into the final third and then using the ball intelligently. And I was delighted for him. I think he's a really good young player. I think there's a lot more to come from him. And I just hope that this now ensures, hopefully, that he's one of two rotation right backs next year. My concern has always been that it wouldn't pan out that way, but I hope that now he's done enough. Let's talk a little about next year, because with everything going on over Christmas in terms of football, there's also been this whole backdrop of Man United changing their manager, Pochettino naturally being linked to the managerial position. And that must have been challenging for Poch and the players. They kind of glossed over it fairly well, but how do you feel this is going to pan out with United? Obviously, they've appointed Solskjaer until the end of the season, but is Poch going to be their first choice?
I think he should be. I think it makes a lot of sense for him to be. I don't think there could be much doubt over Pochettino's ability and what he might be able to do with the finances that would be made available to him at United. And I'm pretty scared, to be honest, because I think that Pochettino is... I tweeted this the other day, but I don't think we've had a better asset at the club, certainly not in the modern era, not since I've been alive. Whether it makes sense for Pochettino, I guess, is the bigger question. And I think there can be a little bit of doubt about that. But, you know, it's still a big, big job at a big, big club where the players he wants will be bought for him, and the players that would already be there at his disposal are incredible.
Yeah, I feel... I feel like the move makes complete sense for football reasons, in terms of you can see the upside for him going into that club that's underachieving and turning players around, and you know they have real quality in that squad that's just been terrifically mismanaged. You think how you sort of imagine how he might get hold of Pogba and turn him into one of the best players in the world, and you think, yeah,
easily.
I can see why that would appeal to him and why he'd want to go and do that. I think even players like Lingard and Rashford, they're recognised as good English players, but they could be great. They could be really, really excellent footballers. You know, it's probably fair to say that Lingard isn't rated as highly as Dele Alli, and I think he could be with a proper manager, and Rashford could become a really great striker. So I get it from that perspective. I get why Poch would be attracted to that project. I really do. I think it makes a lot of sense. But the non-footballing reasons. So I don't think that structure suits him. I don't think the structure they've got at United, with an owner who wants to get involved, with Woodward there, I don't think that suits him. And they want to put in a director of football as well. And that sort of, for me, feels like a little bit of a step back. He came into a similar structure at Spurs and then ultimately took on greater control, where he went from coach to manager. And I presume that was because that was what he demanded. He wanted that extra control. And yeah, we know we've got a transfer committee. So we've got a committee whereby we have Pochettino, John McDermott, who's the head of coaching. You have our head scout. And then you have, I presume, Poch's coaching team, whoever in that transfer committee, and Daniel Levy. But you'd have to think that he has the final say. Would he have that at United? I don't know. Would they, if they're bringing in a director of football type position, surely that's to manage things like transfers. And don't get me wrong, I feel that's one of Poch's weak areas. I think signings have been a bit of an issue for him. Maybe that would change when he's given blank checks, I don't know. But I'm not 100% sure he'd fit into that structure at United. I think it also goes against some of the things that I've learned about him, which are around his loyalty and his character. He's spoken so much previously about why he wouldn't manage certain clubs because they don't fit with, or they don't suit his history. They go against his history. And would he really go to another Premier League team now? Obviously, he did it from Southampton Spurs, but he's created a bit of a legacy at Spurs. He's, like you've just mentioned, he's one of the greatest assets in your lifetime. I think we'd all, if he were to leave, we'd remember him as the best manager we've had in, well, since the 80s. Would he do that? I'm not convinced. And if it comes down to ambition and money, then this seems like a bad time to make that step, because we're just about to move into a new stadium. That will lead to a huge increase in matchday revenue, which can lead into a huge increase in our wage outlay. So we can, hopefully, within a year, start backing him financially, start giving him the types of sums of money that clubs like United would have. Maybe not to the same extent and not immediately, but there will be steps in that direction, I'm sure. And I think it was Raphael Honigstein made a point on the Totally Football Show about his own pay. And he said, you know, United could double Pochettino's wages, so why don't Spurs just treble them? And I fully agree with that. I don't think it's quite as simple, because if I know anything about Pochettino, it's that he would want the wages of his entire coaching staff trebled as well. He'd want to look out for Jesus Perez and Tony Jimenez. They would be there as well, and he's thinking. But why not? We can afford that now. Just do it. Pay them whatever they want to keep them there for another 3-4 years if needs be. I don't think it's as cut and dried as the media are making out. And I really hope it's not, because it would be a huge step backwards. Do you have any thoughts on where we'd go next if he were to leave?
I might be able to sort of come up with a few names, but it'll be very difficult for us. And I am not hugely confident in our ability to scout managers because of the managers we've had in the past. Yeah, there's a few out there. I want to carry on with the Pochettino thing, though. Every fan is desperate for us to spend lots of money, and every window feels like it's you know, we've got to spend money this window, sort of thing. So it's very much a situation. It's very easy for us to want this to be a window where we need to spend money, but it really feels like that's a huge factor right now. This growing narrative and belief that just from the couple of things that Pochettino said, and also the wider context, that I've never been worried about the sort of the job opportunities that have come up for Pochettino in the past, because I felt, well, why would he be in a rush to leave here? But if he feels like the club won't invest in him at the moment, then what's the point? If he feels like that he is not betrayed is too strong a word, what we're looking at, if he's been sort of misled by Levy into thinking that there would be funds and then suddenly there isn't, then I think that's not an entirely dissimilar situation to the circumstances under which he left Southampton. Again, yeah, it's very easy for us as fans to say, well, we've got to spend money on players because that's what we want anyway. But this really feels like that's sort of the main factor at the moment.
I think what you're saying is spend some fucking money, Levy.
Yeah, pretty much.
And that leads us on nicely to January transfer window. We're being linked with all kinds of players at the moment. It seems from the way the media portray these links, it seems scattergun again, and it seems like we have a whole host of different transfer strategies,
yep.
Some of which involve going back to previous strategies which we've spoken about before, which we all kind of like. which is signing young talent from the Championship, potentially loaning them back to the Championship for a year, and then seeing how that develops. And there's a couple of players linked in that way. But then we've got some really sort of slightly more random names from Europe. I'll get you to talk through some of these names, but we'll just start off with a question from Scott LeBar, or Scott LeBear. Apologies, Scott, if I've got that wrong. He says, we're linked with Rabiot in January. Would this be a good signing? Does it make sense for our squad and the upgrades we need in central midfield? Have you done some work on Rabiot?
Yeah, a little bit.
What do you make of him?
As a player, he's phenomenal. He's really, really good. I know we were interested before. I think we wanted him permanent, and he was only offer on loan. He's a really exceptional player. The issue is that there's a lot of questions over his character, and that continues into his. Essentially, he's looking down on Spurs at the moment, and he's saying that he's better than us, which is not a great way to start over someone who's had character issues in the past. And I think his mum, who works as his agent, is sort of really difficult to deal with, or at least that's the suggestion. So Rabiot has his heart set on Barcelona at the moment. I think the suggestion is that there's an offer been tabled to him for Spurs. But he's turned his nose up at that pretty much with a level of certainty. But if he's holding out for Barcelona and Barcelona aren't interested, well, then maybe he'll sort of find himself going, oh, I need a club now. The problem is, are those the circumstances you want a player to arrive at your club at? Probably not. But as a player, he's exceptional.
And who would you compare him to? Is he a Dembele light?
He's sort of like that. He's not sort of... he's not got the weight of Dembele. He's a bit more sort of light. Both, you know, he moves a little more, but he's a box to box player. He keeps it tight. His passing is good. You know, yeah, he's a dribbling box to box central midfielder.
And we could certainly do with one of those. There are other central midfielders being linked, though. I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce some of these. Take us through them all, Nathan, and give us a bit of background info if you can.
I also have never heard this name pronounced out loud. So I think it's Tony Vilhena, the Feyenoord midfielder. Again, you know, an all-action box-to-box midfielder. He scores some goals from range. He likes a dribble. He puts up pretty good defensive numbers. He's an all-rounder, but I'm not totally blown away by him. I don't think he stands out that much at Feyenoord, which... probably, you know, if you're not standing out there, how's that going to translate? He's good, but he's not great. And I do think that we're holding out for great because we already have, you know, we already have Winks. He's good. The problem is he's not great. If we need great, is this player going to be that? I think that there was a lot of excitement for Vilhena sort of a few years ago because he was, you know, 20 and he was already very good. But I don't think he's progressed that much since then. Certainly as the player type, the match is there. I'm just not 100% about his quality. Sander Berge, on the other hand, really, really does stand out at Genk. He's only 20 years old, but he's massive. He's got excellent ball control, incredible passing. Again, the question is, does it translate? But his performances are at such a level. And also, as Joel, I can't remember his name, pointed out on Twitter the other day, his performances have also held up in the Europa League. So, there's a lot of excitement for Sander Berge, but that's not just us. There's a lot of interest in him in general, and he might cost a fair amount.
So he's 20.
Yeah.
And he's 6'4".
Yeah. He's not actually that great in the air, considering his height. He should be better in the air, but otherwise he's just generally amazing.
Right, okay. He's not Marouane Fellaini.
No. He's not. He's bulky as well. He's not just like a rake. He's a really silky footballer.
I saw a photo of him on Twitter last night, and I said he looks like he ate Harry Winks.
He's eaten a few Harry Winks. He's also eaten all of his attacking passing as well.
Nice. Okay, next.
So Nicolò Varela, we should have got Vardy on for this one. so to me, he's more of a number six, not in that he's especially defensive, but he's that player who sits in front of the defence and passes it, you know, that Busquets, Jorginho sort of player. I'm not sure if that is really who we need. Maybe what we want to change how we operate, our deepest midfielder, or maybe we think that Barella, I don't know, would sort of translate well into playing as our sort of more defensively focused central midfielder, if that makes sense. I think he's a really good player. I'm just not sure he's the right fit.
So where does he play at the moment?
So he mostly plays in defensive midfield, occasionally central midfield.
Is he a Weigl type?
Yes.
And I like the look of him aesthetically. He's a very handsome young man. He'd certainly fit the Spurs only signing attractive men philosophy. He's 21.
Yeah.
So there's upside as well, and presumably wouldn't be overly expensive since he's not overly experienced. So that might appeal as well. The other central midfielder we're being linked with is Eberechi Eze. I think it's Eze, who plays for QPR. And he's a player I've seen a bit of, and one of my friends is a Wickham season ticket holder, and he loved this guy when he was on loan at Wickham. He said his main skill sets are his incredibly quick feet, which meant at League Two, where he was on loan at Wickham, they've since gone up, but he could beat anyone in central midfield and then drive forward, which is obviously a huge characteristic to have in that division, as it would be in any division. But he's also quite a sort of adaptable player who can play. You'd imagine he could play in any of the three behind a striker in a 4-2-3-1, or as a third central midfielder in a 4-3-3. Really quick feet, great ball control, capability of beating a man, and has now lots of experience in the Football League. So I could see how that one would appeal as well. He's been linked with us for, what, 2 years now, I think? So I think that probably implies that we're scouting him and just keeping an eye on his progress. Likewise, we've got a couple of other young Championship players that we're keeping an eye on. So firstly, Lloyd Kelly at Bristol City, who is the England under-20 captain. So I've seen a bit of him for England, although he plays as a centre-back for England under-20, whereas for Bristol City he plays as a left-back. I think the main reason he would appeal to us is that he's a left-footed centre-half.
Yeah.
And we need that balance in our squad. We need a second left-footed centre-half for when Vertonghen's not around. And that'll be nice. The fact that he's playing at left-back can only be a good thing, because it means he's developing his technique on the ball, his ability to drive forward with the ball. And it gives him that bit of leeway, I suppose, in the Championship, where he's not the last line of defence, so he can be a little bit more... he doesn't have to be quite so concerned at the moment while he's still a developing young player. But Kelly's excellent. He's another tall player. He must be 6'3". But he's one who just has a very natural gait. He just seems to glide around the pitch. And those players are often players that go on to become big, in a sense. I mean, it sounds obvious, but if someone looks good, they generally become good. And he does look the part. He really does move well. So I think Lloyd Kelly is one that would make a lot of sense. But perhaps that would be a buy and then loan back if it were to happen. And then you've got the two fullbacks at Norwich. So you've got Max Ahrens, who's the right back. He's a little bit younger than his counterpart on the other side, who is, Jamal Lewis is the... Yeah, Jamal Lewis is the left back. I've not seen much of either of them, but Lewis is, I think, 20 and has played for England at various levels. Ahrens now has been drafted into England's youth setup since he's been involved this season. They're talking very highly of both of them, but Ahrens seems to be the one that's really rated. I guess the fact that he's a right back means that arguably it's a less of a relevant position for us, because we have three right backs. Who knows what we'll do with Aurier and Trippier in the summer. But Ahrens is one that's been linked with a whole host of clubs. And Lewis, the left back, hasn't been linked so much. Perhaps it's because he's 20 now, and I don't know, the next young thing is kind of on the conveyor belt already. But I do like Lewis. The little I've seen of him, he's good at attacking the final third, and obviously as a Spurs fullback, you need to be able to do that. So I think that'll be an interesting one. Ahrens is the one who's been primarily linked with Spurs, but Lewis is certainly being watched by a number of Premier League clubs as well.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So there are some players there of interest. And the final one was, is it Joachim Andersson?
I think it's Joachim, but don't hold me to that. And if there are any Sampdoria fans or Danish fans, please forgive me. But yeah, he is a centre-half. We have been linked with a couple of centre-backs over the last sort of year or so. Although we've also extended Vertonghen's contract, and I think we're about to extend Adeverla's contract, so maybe we might stall our interest in centre-halves. We do have Foyth and Davinson Sanchez at the club already, but I still believe that we should be looking eventually to return to playing three centre-backs at a time, so I don't think it's completely ridiculous that we would be looking. Andersen, he's another big boy for his age. But he's also still pretty good with the ball at his feet. He can, hit a diagonal, but he's really comfortable on the ball, under pressure, lovely little passes into midfield. But he's quite a lot like Vertonghen defensively, despite his size, in that he's the one who comes forward and he's aggressive and he makes the interception. He steps off his defensive line and clatters his player and will pick up a card occasionally if he doesn't get the ball. But yeah, he's a big, strong, but talented centre-half.
Right-footed.
Yes, right-footed, sorry, yes.
Yeah, see, that would... Instantly, I'm thinking, not that that's a problem,
Sure.
Good centre-backs are good centre-backs, but I do feel that balance is important in the squad, and we've now got Alderweireld, Sanchez and Foyth, who are all right-footed, with Dyer, obviously, he can play centre-back, he's right-footed, Carter Vickers, right-footed, and the lefties are basically just Vertonghen and Davis.
Andersen has played on the left quite a bit, but then so has Foyth and so had Davinson, so...
Yeah, and none of them look quite as good on the left, I think it's fair to say. We'll see if that's a priority. I mean, is central midfield still your number one priority?
I think so,
Yeah, same for me. And I think left-back is becoming a big priority as well. No disrespect to Davis, who actually I thought played really well when he played at left-centre-back over this Christmas period, but... He's just not been as good this year, and it's starting to look like last year was a bit of an anomaly for Davis. Although I don't doubt that Pochettino can still get more out of him. I don't feel he's ever going to progress beyond where he is now.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know whether last year was sort of the odd year out. Maybe he's played too much this year and he's not getting enough rest between games because Rose has been out, and now maybe that Rose is back in, we'll see Davies pick up form. But yeah, it's slightly odd to see him regress. It's odd to see any player regress under Pochettino. So yeah, it's strange.
Actually, we did have a question about that. I'll find who it's from in a second. But he was asking, we've seen lots of leaps forward in players under Poch, but do you feel like any players have gone backwards this year? And Davies is one, but do you get a vibe that any other players have gone a bit backwards this year?
Any other player going backwards, I would simply say, is down to injury or age or whatever. I don't think I can think of another example of a player, just turning out lesser performances week in, week out.
I guess Winks would be the one that... You can easily put that down to injury.
He's regressed. I think that he's failed to sort of continue to step up with game time, which again, is not his fault and we should be happy with what he is. It just means that, the hope was that he would be our next great central midfielder, and the fact that he isn't, doesn't mean that he isn't a worthwhile player.
That was from Cy, Belgian CB on Twitter, by the way. The other players that I think have regressed slightly this year are Alderweireld.
Sure.
I think you can make a whole host of excuses for that.
Yep.
Not having a settled centre-back partner would be a big one. But there's no doubt for me he's not playing as well as he did 2 years ago, where he was just absolutely amazing. And this is controversial, Hugo Lloris. And I say it's controversial, not... I mean, I think the groundswell of opinion is that Lloris has been worse this year, and that's often been associated with what's happened off the pitch. But the stats community are saying that Lloris is playing the best he's played in years, essentially. His numbers look great, right?
Yeah, so there was an article in StatsBomb by Mike Goodman, but I've seen elsewhere, his shot stopping by the numbers has been brilliant this year. And I'm going to side with the numbers in that, yeah, sure, his shot stopping has been good, but he's also been making some mistakes elsewhere that don't affect those numbers in his decision to come out. And we haven't seen those in a little while. He's getting a lot of flack for the Wolves game. I wouldn't blame the Wolves game on him. And with that, I would then say it's actually been a little while in the season since he's cocked up. But I think his shot stopping has been very good, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's having a great season.
Yeah, I feel like there have been a lot of high profile errors, which perhaps exaggerate and magnify. They put a lens on him. Plus, we were all disappointed with what he did off the pitch as well, which certainly it can't help but play on your mind. Also with Lloris, the other factor of him is how good Gazzaniga's been when he's come in. Because it starts, when you've got a viable alternative, or perceived viable alternative, you start then thinking, what if we just gave him a few games? What if we took Lloris out of the team? What if Gazzaniga came in and was amazing? And he has done really well when he's been called upon.
He has. I think one of the factors with how our fans assess Lloris is that it's been a long, long time since we haven't had Lloris as our keeper, sort of 5-10 games in a row. Again, with Gazzaniga, you can't fault the performances that he's given us. But I wouldn't bet any money on those performances sustaining if suddenly he was to replace Lloris. I think that our understanding of what a goalkeeper is and what a goalkeeper looked like has been changed by getting used to Lloris over the last several years.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And there's, you know, with Lloris, you get the intangibles as well. He's apparently such a huge character in the dressing room. He's obviously a respected leadership figure despite drink driving. And he speaks very well in press conferences, etc., etc. He's captain of his country. He's all these things that you don't get in a normal, in air quotes, player. So you do get that added extra of him. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the rest of the season and our predictions. Because I listened back to our sort of pre-season preview pod, which was called 4-1-4-1, if anyone's interested in going back to listen to it. It was quite interesting, actually. There's a few things we got wildly wrong, as you'd imagine.
Yep.
There's a few things we touched on, and I think we nailed some things as well. So, for example, I mentioned that I had some major concerns over our midfield with Dembele and Wanyama. That wasn't an outlandish prediction, so I'm not going to claim huge insight with that one. But you then mentioned dropping Eriksen deeper and essentially becoming part of the midfield, and I think that certainly happened, particularly with this diamond midfield we've been playing. But Eriksen has become almost more midfield than attacking midfield, I would say, this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the natural progression. If you've got issues in central midfield and you've got sort of a part-time midfielder, you make him a full-time midfielder.
Yeah. You spoke at length about the 4-1-4-1, hence the name of that podcast, and it hasn't quite panned out that way. In fact, if anything, we've gone even further the other way, with Trippier playing as a winger, essentially. That hasn't been a facet of our play at all. It would have been one way to get round of our midfield issues, sort of bringing the fullbacks in narrower and creating some more chaos in there. Hasn't worked out for whatever reason. Bardi had a preference once again for the back three. We've not really seen that at all this year, maybe in one or two games. But you've mentioned there you think we can go back to that if we sign another centre-back, and I would agree with that. You spoke, Nathan, about how we should add more goals from set-pieces, and that was a real feature of our game at the start of this season. We seem to be scoring loads from set-pieces, or from second balls from set-pieces.
Yeah.
That's dropped off a little.
Yeah, I think there's two factors in the drop-off. One is that we're playing a couple of times a week, and so we don't have the time sort of to put, you know, at the beginning of the season when we're playing once a week, you can spend time in training dedicated to set pieces, but when you've only got one session for a game, you need to prepare your game plan for that game. I think the other is that Davinson Sanchez is a huge factor for set pieces, in that almost every time we were looking for him first, for him to knock it on to the opposite post, or, you know, back across or back to the spot. So I think that he's missed a lot of games recently, so he's sort of been our fulcrum.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if if he gets some more games over the next month or so, whether the set piece success returns. He is, I've mentioned this before, but he had a reputation for scoring goals from set pieces before he joined us, and I'd love to see that continue, because if you can add goals from set pieces, as you mentioned in that podcast, it's such a big relief for the front players, and they could happen at any time as well, which is very, you don't have to be on top of a match, you don't have to be in control. It's something to focus on, surely. In terms of the title challenges, Bardi mentioned City being on a different planet and said that Liverpool were the standout contenders. He also then said about Chelsea that he had a theory that we'd see Hazard pushed into a Mertens role, which I think nailed it. I think that's happened.
You could argue that Mertens played as a sort of a straight centre forward despite his history in other roles, right, whereas Hazard is playing sort of a more midfielder's interpretation, false nine, dropping in sort of thing.
Mm. Yeah, that's fair. I said that Liverpool scared me, and I said that they'd overtake us, and that they won't be a million miles behind City, and the only reason they wouldn't win the league is basically that Klopp doesn't close out games. And I think, in a sense, Klopp has fixed that this year, and I think the way they've added to their midfield has helped fix that for him. Whether that was a strategic intention from him or not, I don't know, but basically phasing out, to some degree, Henderson and probably Milner the long term has meant that they've then got those players to bring on to close out a game at the end. And I don't know if you saw Henderson come on against Arsenal, but he looked really good. He looked really, really good coming off the bench with fresh legs, and he actually did some good attacking things as well as closing the game out as well. But that's worked really well for Liverpool, and I know you think that City will still win the league. I think it's going to be incredibly close.
Yeah, no, I'm giving in on that now. And I'm now going to cycle back to the opinion I had on another podcast pre-season, which is I did predict that Liverpool would win there. So now I'm going to pretend there was no phase where I claimed this.
Okay, nicely done.
Yeah.
And in terms of relegation, I got this horribly wrong. So Bardi said that Huddersfield would implode, that Cardiff would probably go down. But he also said that Wolves won't be as good as many people think. You said Southampton will be dangling into the danger zone, and that certainly looks like happening unless their manager can turn it round. They've shown signs of that being a possibility.
I think that they were dangling into the danger zone. They've made a smart decision to remove Mark Hughes, and I think Hasenhüttl is a good manager.
Mm. I also said Southampton. I said that Watford would struggle to score goals. Obviously, I didn't fact in Pereira, who's been absolutely outstanding this season. I said that Newcastle will struggle. Fair enough, got that one. I said that Cardiff and Huddersfield would be doomed. Cardiff have done better than I thought they would, to be honest. I'm reasonably impressed with them. And I also said that Bournemouth would be in trouble, but they'd be okay because Watford would be the third team to go down. So, I don't know. What do I know about football? So we got a question from John and a whole bunch of numbers, so I'm going to call him Johnny Numbers. Johnny Numbers says, linked to looking back to your pre-season predictions, we are 20 games into and third in the Premier League season, in the last 16 of the Champions League and the last four of the Carabao Cup, but still not in the new stadium. Given what we know now, what does a successful season look like? So from here, Nathan, from this point, not from what you thought at the beginning of the season, what is success to Spurs now?
I think getting into the new stadium is success. I think that we're going to finish third or fourth, probably third, which, you know, is really, really good. It won't have felt like blistering football. It won't have felt like a great performance, but you have to remember that we are, by a distance, the sixth richest team in the league. So finishing third is incredible, even if it feels like, okay, fine. Obviously a domestic cup would be brilliant. And I think, you know, it would be nice to go another round or maybe another two rounds in the Champions League. And that's where our source of excitement is going to come from this season. But the main thing is just getting into that stadium and making that a party, making that a celebration, having a great atmosphere, playing some nice football in the new stadium. Actually, no, I've changed my mind. The best thing we can do is hold on to our manager.
Yeah, I was going to say exactly the same thing. Anything we can do between now and the end of the season, which means that he's more likely to stay, is success. And that might be winning a cup, going further than the Champions League, finishing third, whatever it takes, whatever we can do that will influence his decision, it has to be considered a success. And then next season, I know this is always the way this bird, and then next season, we look to build on it.
Yeah, we are here next year.
In our new stadium.
Yeah, maybe Pochettino will fall in love with the new stadium and he'll be overcome emotionally by it.
Yeah, that would be lovely. That would be lovely. I feel like we should talk a little about the emergence of Sissoko, because he's a player we've panned.
Yep.
And I don't think I've ever seen more of a transformation in a footballer than I have in last season's Moussa Sissoko to this season's Moussa Sissoko. And that's not to say that I think he's a well-beater now, because I really don't. I still ultimately don't think he's a good enough player to be in the starting 11 of a team with aspirations of finishing in the top 3-4 regularly. However, he was utterly hopeless last year, and that's no exaggeration. There's no Moussa Sissoko was doing some good things and just didn't have luck on his side. No, he was abysmal in everything he did. And this season, he's been player of the month. He's had a run of games against some top quality teams where he was one of the best players on the pitch. He's put together performances where he's been the most important player for us in a number of different ways. In his energy he brings, in his scrapping for the ball, he's driving forward with the ball, his personality, his character, all these traits that you just would not have associated with him previously at Spurs. What have you made of Sissoko, and how the hell has Poch done this again?
I guess we can't be surprised at Pochettino's ability to get the best out of a player, but we are surprised at what that ability is with regards to Sissoko. It feels like the real big difference is that whereas previously every decision he made was wrong, now nearly every decision he makes is right. And that's honestly bizarre to see such a flip, to go from one extreme to the other. What's burned into my brain is Arsenal away last season. Was it last season with the Fighting Cock Live? Mm-hmm. Trying to play a possession game with Sissoko against Arsenal. And every time the ball comes to Sissoko, he would fuck it up. He would miscontrol his touch. He would give the ball away, and it just killed us. And the idea that player is now, you know, competently, deliberately drawing players towards him before making a smart pass off at an angle to create space. It's like Pochettino's got a PlayStation controller for him, and he's just micromanaging every decision. I don't want to take the credit away from Sissoko there. He is making the decisions, but it's just incredible.
And Poch, this has been a remarkable turnaround, absolutely remarkable turnaround, and Pochettino has to take a huge amount of credit. Sissoko has to take a huge amount of credit. But there's one other factor that deserves a huge amount of credit, and that is the card game Uno. Because for me, Sissoko becoming club Uno champion has coincided with the return of his form, and obviously I'm being facetious, but I do sort of strangely believe that they are linked. In that, he is so clearly well-liked now within the squad. He is such a popular character within the squad. He's the one leading the Instagram videos after every game. He's the one developing new handshakes with Heung-min Son. He's the one who's all the players want to rally round when he does anything good and want to celebrate with when they or he, when they score. I was going to say when he scores, but he doesn't score. he's such a big character now within our squad. And genuinely, maybe this whole Uno thing that happened over the course of, 2 months at Spurs, where they were just constantly playing cards and having fun together as a group, that brought him out of his shell. And as Poch was developing his self-belief and telling the media, this is a player who can do X, Y, and Z, when we didn't believe he could. So presumably he didn't believe he could. Maybe it's all been part of it and building his character, and he might just be the ultimate confidence player. And Pochettino's man management, as well as his tactical coaching, are just unparalleled. I'm so impressed.
Statue of a deck of Uno cards outside the new stadium.
Yes, I'm down with that. Okay, we're going to finish off on some questions. We had a fair few, but I've picked out three, so apologies if we're not going to answer your question. Send more in next time. So Steve Jennings Wright says, you might have covered this before, but I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on how our pressing game has changed since Poch's first season. Very little intensity in the press versus Wolves. Was it down to fatigue or indicative of a gradual change in approach? And you have briefly mentioned this before, Nathan, but I'd be interested to hear your thoughts now after half a season.
Yeah, I think you have to take the Wolves game as an anomaly. We were definitely fatigued or scared of fatigue in that game. But I do think that there has been a gradual change of less intensity. I think that sort of increased efficiency rather than sort of a decrease in desire, I think we're able to create the same sort of squeeze without running ourselves into the ground. So there's only positives there for me.
Yeah. Would you say our pressing style has changed? Are we more of a passing lanes press team now than we were 2 years ago?
Yeah, again, it's sort of efficiency. You don't have to bum rush the player if you can just sort of choke off his options. I don't think we've sort of totally changed the angles from which we press.
All the triggers?
Yeah. We're still man orientated, but we're just being a little more clever about it.
We like to funnel a team into a particular area, which is normally a fullback,
yeah,
and push them into going long from fullback, and then win the second balls and regain possession. That's broadly the style that Spurs, the pressing style that Spurs take. I believe.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's changed. It's just the way we've done it has changed slightly. Although having said that, in the Everton game, we saw a whole different style of pressing, which worked wonderfully, and which I hadn't seen before. Mittal, who is M13TUL, says, the success of the diamond midfield or 4-3-3. Formation-wise, how can we reduce the impact of Son? Oh, I see. So he's... Okay, he wants us to talk about the success of the diamond. And then he said, formation-wise, how do we reduce the impact of Son going to the Asia Cup, as Lucas next to Harry didn't work well before? And I think that's a really salient point, actually. So this recent run of good form has come with us playing Son up top with Kane. And Son's been magnificent. He's really refound his best form, and he's been our best player, I think, over this past 6-week period. How can we mitigate when he goes off to play for South Korea? How do we handle that? What do we do to adapt?
I think that no two players are as similar in the squad as Son and Lucas. I think that there's a very obvious and easy natural replacement there. The question says, and a lot of people have said before, that the Kane and Lucas diamond didn't work that well before. We did beat United. And I think that Kane's fitness has improved a lot since then. So I would have some optimism about just simply replacing Son with Lucas when Son goes. Or I guess he's gone now. Is he playing on? Is he available for the first? I don't know.
Yeah, okay. He's playing against United and then he goes.
Okay, fine. So yeah, I think that the problems that we do have go deeper than Lucas replacing Son. So I don't think that's a huge issue. You know, Son's been great, and I don't think that Lucas will replace him that well. But I don't think that there's anything inherently terrible about Kane and Lucas up front together.
How would you feel about Dele being the man to replace Son up front and then dropping Lamella in behind?
Yeah, I think that's definitely an option worth considering if Lucas doesn't fire straight away.
They're both good options to have, essentially, and he might use both. I felt like Lamella was playing really well before he got this latest injury, and I'd love to if we could just parachute him into that form, parachute him into the team in that form, rather, and he could pick up where he left off. I still really like Lamella. I think he's got loads to offer.
Yeah, I think we've missed him over the last few days.
Mm. Yeah, he'd been so useful against Wolves in so many different ways, but he's just so unreliable in terms of his fitness. It's a real pity. And there's two questions here from Ahmed Abdelnane, who is A. Abdelnane on Twitter. He says, what is our best tactical system and formation? So let's handle that one first. What do you believe now? I mean, you're a believer in fluid tactics, but what do you think suits us best as a squad?
I think formation-wise, our best performances have come in the 3-4-3, or you might instead call it a 3-5-2. I think our best performance as a club came against Tony Pulis's West Brom in January 2017. Is that right?
I think it was a
4-1. So we'd played Chelsea the week before, that sort of famous victory, Dele repeating the same header twice from an Eriksen assist. And then next week we played West Brom. We had a Wanyama Dembele midfield. We had Rose and Walker at fullback. Actually, it might have been Davies. Dyer did play right centre back with Toby in the middle and Jan at left centre back. Kane, Eriksen, and Ali up top. And we just played the most fluid, wonderful football with the most, the greatest realisation of Pochettino's tactics, which is squeezing the opposition and then moving the ball to move them and creating the space. We've only ever played that formation a couple of times, and it's absurd. I guess it's sort of the reality of football is that you never really have your first 11. But I think that if we can get a really good central midfielder, a couple of fullbacks, and maybe a defensive midfielder too, that we can recreate that and that we will be a team maybe nearly as good as any other in the league.
Wow. You mentioned that you weren't sure if Rose or Davies played in the game. It was very much Rose, and I remember him being absolutely exceptional in that match.
Davies ridiculously high. Davies came on to play centre-back when Vertonghen went off injured.
That sounds right. Yeah, that sounds right. I just remember Rose and Walker playing as high as I ever saw them play for Spurs, and it was quite remarkable. And Ahmed's second question was, when playing 4-2-3-1 with Son, Dele and Eriksen behind Kane, what's the best position for each of them? Do you have a view as to where they should all sit ideally in that system?
So generally Pochettino likes to play Son on the left, Dele through the middle and Eriksen on the right. I'm not huge on that. I would prefer Eriksen on the left and Son on the right. I think that we talk about how incredibly two-footed Son is, and he is, but he's not especially two-sided despite that, and I think that's a bit of a shame that considering he has such a good left foot, he should be able to play on the right. And whereas Eriksen, you know, again, he is two-footed, but he's not, you know, fully ambi-bipedal like Son is. So I prefer them the other way around. But hey, if it works, I'm not going to question Pochettino.
Yeah, and Son sort of running into the box from the left-hand side is such a big facet of his play. And he draws so many fouls in that area. He manages to hit the byline and get those little squeezing those crosses somehow. And it does work well, whereas, like you say, Eriksen can pretty much do a job anywhere and make it look effective. And naturally will come into the midfield from that position as well, which is helpful.
Yep.
I think we'll leave it there, Nath. We normally do further reading, but what we're going to do instead is put out a few New Year's or New Year's Eve posts on Twitter with some of the stuff that we've enjoyed this year. I do want to say, though, thank you to all the guests we've had in this year. So in 2018, we've had Dan Kilpatrick and Jack Pitbrook. We've had Priya Ramesh, Daniel Story. We had Spurs Fanatical, Mark, who was amazing. We must have him back. We had Carl and Kai on for the youth pods, and that was so fascinating for me in particular. We had Nico Morales, we had Thiago Estevao, and we had John McKenzie. Thank you all very, very much for being a part of this podcast. We really appreciate it. We're very proud of how the podcast's grown this past year. We've had 150,000 listens in 2018, which is great for a small pod that's quite niche. So your support is very much appreciated. And if you do have time to leave an iTunes review, it would be great for us. It would really help us out when we're trying to get sponsors and just to keep this ship going for the next year. Thank you, Nathan.
Thank you.
It's been a real pleasure talking to you over the past year, and I'm looking forward to more of the same in 2019. Your insights are always unparalleled. And happy New Year to Bardi as well. He's not here today because he's away in South Africa, and we couldn't get a secure enough connection to get him on, but obviously he'll be back as soon as possible. He's very much a big part of this pod. Thank you everyone for listening, and we'll see you in 2019.
Interesting, mate, yeah.